This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
J.I. Halsell is an NFL agent. He's a former salary cap analyst, but he's always nice enough to put the salary cap analyst hat back on when we ask nicely. So when the news broke today that the salary cap was coming in a lot higher than the formulas indicated that it would, we were like, J.I., will you please put on your analyst hat? And with us now, J.I. Halsell. J.I., what's up, my guy? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm probably not doing as well as you, though, because not only do you get to talk on the radio and do all that kind of fun stuff, but you're an active NFL agent, and now your players have more money that they can make. So today's like a great day for agents, right?
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, you know, particularly next week as we go into the combine and those conversations where the legal or illegal start happening around free agency and market values, the fact that we've got a better sense for what the salary cap increase is going to be and how big of an increase it's going to be are going to be helpful for those conversations.
For sure. And so let me ask you this, because obviously we're going to spend most of our time talking about how this might affect Washington here. But is this actually like a bigger deal for the teams like the Patriots or the Commanders that have a ton of cap space? Or is this a bigger deal for teams like the Saints who are at the bottom of the available space? And in fact, they are underwater in terms of the salary cap.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if you're the Saints as an example, and this is an annual kind of rite of passage for the New Orleans Saints in terms of restructuring deals to get salary cap compliant. But yeah, any increase that you get to the salary cap that is beyond what was projected is helpful for them. Now, when you're a team like the Commanders, yeah, it just gives you a little more flexibility. And when you look at kind of your off-season planning, particularly from a cap management standpoint, it probably doesn't move the needle materially, though, in terms of how you're going to approach the offseason. But, yeah, no, there's definitely a little more wiggle room, without a doubt.
So for the agents entering these conversations with an Adam Peters, with whoever the exec is, and you're talking about the money that you want your guy to make, is this something where you're saying, I think that this guy deserves the same percent of salary cap as this deal when it was signed? Is it about the actual dollar figures? Like, how do those conversations go down? And then how does this news today ultimately affect that? I would assume it affects it a lot more if there's a percent of cap conversation happening.
When you're on the agent side of the business, you're always trying to find something that is truthful that you can hang your hat on as you try to frame your argument for why your client should make more money, right? And you can try to, yeah, peg it to, okay, if the salary cap is going to be hypothetically $279.5 million, then given that increase, well, now that's what my player's market value relative to what his peers made last season should get. And now, the club doesn't have to buy into that. The club may say, go kick rocks. We got another player who's going to take our offer. And so, it's just another data point as you try to make your argument for your client to make as much money as possible.
So the other big thing that I was kind of curious about, I was having this conversation actually with somebody this morning, is what you as an agent care about and what the team cares about are very interrelated, but in some ways, they're not the same, right? The team, and this assumes that you don't have an owner who's breathing down your neck about actual cash spending, which there's a range of that, which is a whole separate conversation. But mainly, the general manager or the decision maker, the contract person on the team side is concerned about the salary cap. They want to know, how do we make this deal good for us in a way that we can sign more players and win more football games? That is the purest version of their side of the argument, where you are going, I want to make my player as much cash as possible. So how does the structure of deals ultimately enter the equation? And how much do you as an agent, once you guys have agreed on a cash number, how much do you care about how the structure of the deal works to get your player that cash while also, you know, help making sure that the team feels good about the deal, or not even feels good about the deal, but will agree to the deal because it works for them as well?
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great question, because the two important words that you just hit on in the question are cash and structure, right? And I always try to frame conversations, whether I was on the club side or now on the agent side, is how do we do a deal that is a win-win for both club and player, right? And oftentimes as an agent, I generally don't care about your cap situation, right? And I would tell you that most clubs appreciate that I don't care about their cap situation, because they're like, look, that's what I need to worry about. You don't need to worry about it. You just need to worry about your client. Okay, cool. But let's agree on a cash number, and however you need to structure it to kind of fit your cap situation, so long as it makes sense from a total value standpoint or from a cash flow standpoint, you can structure it however you need for your cap management, but I need for my player to get the proper market value in this deal. And so that's often how you come to a win-win deal. The club gets kind of their structure, player gets the value that they're looking for, and the guarantee, most importantly, that they're looking for.
J.I. Halsell, NFL agent, Three Stripes Sports, and a cap analyst, although technically a former cap analyst, but for at least these 15 minutes, he's a cap analyst for us, breaking this all down today for Not My Beat on the Hoffman Show. So let's take a player as an example if we can. Like, the Commanders, I think, are going to want Zach Ertz back. He was so good to them. He wants to be here. He's talked about how he wants to play for Cliff the rest of his career. But if you look at the season he had, and some of the other recent tight end deals, we're talking about a $10 million at least deal probably for Zach Ertz. A, does that sound right? And B, like, if you're looking at it from the club side, how do you make that work if you are Adam Peters piecing together your offseason?
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where you have to marry up on the club side of this. You've got to marry up the budgetary cap commitment against the internal pro scouting of the player's contribution on the field, right? And what we expect that to be into the future. And now, yes, you know, Zach Ertz's age does play into that calculus. But when you look at the tight end market, and yeah, you've got guys, Taysom Hill, Noah Fant at $10.5 million per year. You know, some would say that Zach Ertz relative to the Washington Commanders is probably more valuable to the Commanders than Noah Fant on the Seahawks. And so the question then becomes, well, Evan Ingram's at $13.75 million. He's 31 years old, although he was probably 29 when he did that deal 2 years ago. How does Zach Ertz compare? And if maybe we do get him in that $13 million per year range, well, most importantly, particularly with a player of his age, maybe the guarantee just isn't going to be as high. But for as long as you're here, for as long as you're healthy, we're going to structure it such that we will pay you $13 million per year for as long as you're here, for as long as you're active on game days. And so you get, from an agent perspective, you get the total value you're looking for, but the club gets the insurance or the protection that they're not guaranteed to paying a guy whose production has declined.
And in terms of the fight between the club and the agent over guarantees versus the incentive laden, because I think it's really easy for fans to chime in and be like, I'll give Zach Ertz $13 million if he plays like he did last year. Just got to earn it. Incentives. And if I'm Zach's agent, I'm like, how about you kick rocks? Is it just simply a market thing where, like, if you have $13 million, it's more guaranteed over on Team X, and I'm talking to Team Y, like, hey, we got this deal. Like, do you want to match it or not? Is it that simple, or are those conversations more complex? What other factors go into that?
Yeah, no, it does sometimes come down to that. Like, you know, okay, well, we've got this other offer. Can you match it? When you get the free agency, sometimes it does become just a bidding war, right? But then on the agent side of this, as you talk with your client may really like, you know, in this example, the Washington, D.C. area, right, and want to stay there and not move to another city and learn a new scheme, a new organization, so on and so forth. And so you got to have – I tell people all the time who aspire to work on the agent side of the business that we often get hung up or the attention gets paid to the conversation between agent and team on behalf of the client. But what we don't talk about is kind of the negotiation between agent and client to ensure that we're all on the same page, right? And so, like, that depending upon how that conversation with your client goes will really dictate kind of whether or not you're willing to give a little bit on certain aspects of a proposal or if you're going to dig your heels in or not.
J.R. Hall still with us for another few minutes here on The Hoffman Show. So the other conversation that we've really been having today, J.R., on the show is about what the Commanders do at wide receiver two, because the wide receiver market is super interesting. You have a guy like, this is the example I've been using to illustrate the value of certain positions here. Darnell Mooney signs for $13 million last offseason. So does Saquon Barkley. Like, the wide receiver two market is really expensive. And this draft, people are kind of all over the place on what they think. There's some guys that they like, but it's certainly not as deep as last year. Do you think that we see any kind of market correction? And how does that affect, you know, a guy like, say, De'Ami Brown, who's entering this market now, looking for as big of a payday as he can coming off of his rookie deal?
I don't know that you see a market correction in the wide receiver market. You may see a market correction in the running back market, right? When I think Najee Harris is going to be really interesting to see what he can get, you know, in free agency. Yeah, the wide receiver market has exploded. I mean, you've got a guy like a Deontay Johnson who spent, you know, time this past season on like three different teams, and he's making $18 million per year, right? And I've always kind of wondered this about the wide receiver market is that you can find wide receivers in the draft, and yet this market has exploded, and you kind of use that argument against the running backs, like, oh, we're not going to pay running backs because you can always find running backs in the draft, yet, you know, and so as a result, we don't pay those guys. So to your question regarding wide receiver two in Washington, I think the question becomes, you've seen the Philadelphia Eagles do a great job of this, of kind of extending guys early, before, you know, maybe they hit their peak value. Like, you know, when you look at using the Eagles actually as an example, and you look at Devontae Smith as an example, he's a guy who they could have waited until this offseason to pay him, but it would have been more expensive, right? And so as the Commanders can try to get ahead of the curve a little bit with their extensions, you're going to find that you're going to get these guys at a cheaper price point. Alternatively, yeah, you try to find their backfill in the draft.
Yeah, which is going to be interesting because I think Josh Harris will go for that strategy, but it also takes an owner that's like, well, hey, he's got another year on his rookie deal. Why can't we just let that play out? It's like, well, because then he's going to cost more next year.
It's more expensive.
Yeah, Jeffrey Lurie is just like, yeah, just extend him as soon as possible. We'll win more games that way. We'll make up the cash there. And that is the correct thing as they just won the Super Bowl and are probably raking in all kinds of, you know, souvenir money and merchandise money and all that kind of stuff on all the Super Bowl memorabilia. J.I., great stuff as always, sir. Really appreciate you. And hopefully I'll see you next week somewhere in a hallway in Indianapolis.
That's right.
It's that time of year.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You too, bud. Appreciate you. J.I. Hall with us here on The Hoffman Show. We'll follow up on that conversation more next.